Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much. I have to tell you, I'm excited about this next guest. I've been excited about all of them tonight. I think Jonathan Law has done a great job. This week, Ramsey County started what they hope will be a new place to keep the area clear of hazardous materials. The groundbreaking ceremony is only the beginning for the proposed multi-million dollar facility that will become a one-stop shop for disposal and recycling. Now, County Public Health Deputy Director Ray Eaton Frank joins us now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline to talk about the upcoming facility and how it will help the community. Hello, Ray. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, and I apologize for that mistake. My goodness, you turn one page and you totally forget yourself. There you go. This is a big...
Well, you're as excited to have me here, so I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, glad you joined us. Okay, Ramsey County breaks ground on new one-stop shop for disposal and recycling in Roseville. First of all, we've been trying our best. I know at my mother's house, she loves the recycling, you know, that you keep on the refrigerator, the magnet, you know, so that you know what to put in and where to put it and that sort of thing. The nice thing about it is that that is constantly changing and getting better. And I don't know if what we're talking about tonight is the one thing that we are hearing more about, but I'm so excited that we know that it's going to be better for disposal and recycling in Roseville specifically. How did it come to be Roseville?
Yeah, well, thank you. And I just, the facility that we are currently, that we broke ground for this past week, the Environmental Service Center, is located in Roseville, but it is a site for the entire county. It's a site that will be and a facility that will be available for all Ramsey County residents. So we want to be really clear and welcoming to all of our residents in Ramsey County. The site that we chose actually came after an extensive search with a real estate firm, actually. We looked all over the county. We also did some community engagement with our residents and asked what's your drive time, the maximum drive time you'd want to go to reach this facility. And the location that we found, it actually is a site that the county already owned, and it has been used for years for our property, our public works department. But it's a large site that has room for growth and building a facility. So that's how we landed there. It's within about 10, 15 minutes drive of all our residents. And this initiative is part of a larger county initiative called Enhancing Environmental Health Services.
Well, I tell you, the growth of the land, you know, making sure that we have the land to be able to process all of this really means a lot. That's kind of like one of the number one things for me. Am I putting too much in for recycling? Are there other things that I can do instead of, you know, giving a whole lot more that maybe other people are giving a whole lot more to? And it fills up so fast, it seems. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes, I think that what we're hoping with the Environmental Service Center is that it will be a one-stop shop or a one-stop location, really, for folks to be able to recycle some of the hard-to-recycle items. The main emphasis behind this facility is to expand on our services that we currently offer at Bay West on Empire Drive in St. Paul, which is our household hazardous waste collection site. So this new Environmental Service Center will continue to collect household hazardous waste, which is your paints, your house cleaning chemicals, your yard, sort of your pesticides and herbicides, things that are used in the yard for gardening. And we'll expand on those services that are currently offered at Bay West to make it more convenient for residents.
Right. And this new Environmental Service Center, like you said, located in Roseville, it is already open?
No, the facility that's currently open is what is called Bay West, and it's on Empire Drive in St. Paul. Okay. That's where we currently accept household hazardous waste. We have a reuse room where residents can come and pick up items that are still in conditions that can be used. So a lot of paint comes in and out of there. So that's the current facility. When the new facility is open, the one that we did the groundbreaking for at 1700 Kent Street, we're looking at an anticipated opening date in 2025. The facility at Bay West on Empire Drive in St. Paul will close, and all of those services plus expanded services will open at the new facility in Roseville.
It is quite remarkable. It's something that we needed. I know when I see the recycling being picked up, I get very frustrated. It feels as though I'm not doing enough. So if people wanted to know, how can we continue to do more to make sure that the recycling is done well, to make sure that it's in the proper locations, are all of the locations accepting the same thing, or are there some changes in that?
So the residential pickup will still be the same. And if you're for residents who are looking for more information about that, one of a very good website is the RamseyRecycles.com, where residents can go on and get information about what can be recycled at the curbside, what can go in the bin, what shouldn't go in the bin, that type of thing. And then as far as at the facility, we will be part of what will happen at the Environmental Service Center will be some educational opportunities for the community. So we're hoping this is a space where people can come in, and we'll have our fix-it clinics where residents can come and get items fixed so that they don't have to be put in the trash. A lot of people bring in fans, vacuum cleaners, and they need pretty simple fixes, but things that people might not necessarily have the resources or the know-how how to do. So that's a service that we currently do at rotating locations throughout the county, and now will be centralized when the Environmental Service Center opens. We'll have a location for the fix-it clinics. We'll also do community education. We will have gardens outside that will give people opportunities to for education around native gardens, pollinator gardens, butterfly gardens, that type of thing. So in addition to the recycling, it's a full environmental center.
Which I think is awesome, by the way. Well done. It's amazing to me how much recycling we really do need to put out. And as you watch it and watch us putting it out, it's got to be a little frustrating from time to time, because it doesn't seem as though we are really making a dent in it all, right? The recycling places that we've had before that have been around for a long time has been really good to us, and we just keep putting it in. However, I get confused with certain things that we can't do anymore. With this particular new movement is what I want to say, because I want more of it. Seriously,
yes,
I want us to have more of it. I'm just curious to know, how is it that we will know the changes that may happen with this one, right? Maybe all of a sudden you'll find that there's something else you need to do or something else you need to change. Will we keep getting the information over and over again? Because a lot of times I get the recycling information through the mail. And that's all I ever get at the house. That's it.
Yeah.
I want more information. So how do we get that?
Yes. So again, RamseyRecycles.com is a really great, getting signing up on our Gov Delivery, which you can sign up at Ramsey County. There's a environmental newsletter that we send out every, I don't know if it was every month. I think it's a little bit further spaced out now, but there are opportunities to get on that e-list so that you're getting things into your email box. We do have a page. Ramsey County has a page on Facebook as well as other social media platforms. And there are updates on those pages as well about what the Environmental Service Center and the other recycling opportunities. And then we also have a 633-EASY, 651-633-EASY, which is a hotline, answer 24/7 that people can call in with questions. So if you're wondering about what can go in the recycling or have any other kind of questions about our services, you can either call 651-633-EASY or send an email to askeh@ramseycounty.com.
So now the question,
a whole different opportunities. Yeah.
Right. A whole different opportunity. Now, the cost for this center was $29.7 million. Do you think you'll need to add on to that sooner than later?
The budget for the facility and what the board approved was the $29.7 million. And that's for the entire the design and the building of the facility. And then as far as this question, like adding on to the budget or adding on to the building?
adding on to the building. It's if this is going to happen and it stays there for a long time. I mean, I go back and I look at recycling. I've been doing it for so long, since my first house in 1980, you know. And you have to go and find these places. And a lot of them are still in place, which is very exciting. Are you looking to see or to create more of these, or you feel like we have enough?
Well, the center is being designed with the opportunity that if we are looking for expansion in the future, we'll be able to do that.
Okay.
And I know there are lots of things. We've done several sessions of community engagement and listened to community and heard from our residents about what people want at these facilities. And we know that people really want a more extensive reuse opportunity. We've had community really asking for building reuse, so a place that if you're doing any type of deconstruction or construction on your home, that you can take materials and get materials. So we've heard a lot of things and great ideas from residents, and some things we're not going to initially be able to when we open our doors in 2025. So, yes, I see there is room for expansion and growth.
I just think it's remarkable. We need to do it, and we're doing it. I mean, thank you so much for leading us with this and making sure that we all know about what is happening. Of course, you can always go to RamseyRecycles.com. I want to make sure I have that correct. Recycles.com if you want more information. And if people want to go by and just see it and maybe get a pamphlet, can they give us a pamphlet that may update us on what can be put in that particular location, where we can place things, make sure that we are on top of it? Because some people, I've actually had some younger people say, oh, yeah, I get that recycle thing. I just throw it away. You know, I figure it's going to just go.
I'm glad to hear. I'm excited to hear that you look for it in the mail, as I do, too. And that it sounds like maybe you have some family members who put that up on their fridge, which is I do. I take it around my green guide, and I put it up on the fridge with a magnet and refer to it throughout the year.
It's there.
Cities also have information and send out mailers, so that's something to look for.
Okay.
As well, because the individual cities also have, there are some nuances and differences city by city, and so look for those mailings and information that comes out from your cities as well.
I look forward to it every year. Jill Ahlberg-Yo, thank you so much for joining us, the co-curator of the exhibit. This is really, I keep getting this wrong, by the way. I keep getting it wrong. I keep looking at this name to make sure I get it right. So please forgive me. Ray Eden Frank, Ramsey County Public Health Deputy Director, thank you so much for working on this, for making sure that this follows through. I know you have a whole team working to get this done.
We do.
And it's done. It is done. I want to go see it just to see it, you know?
Well, the groundbreaking's done. You can go by. There's a sign that will show you a picture. If you go on our website and look for Enhancing Environmental Health Services, or actually if you just Google Ramsey County Environmental Service Center, we do have a video. We have a flyover, so you can get a visual of what it's going to look like. If you drive by the facility on 1700 Kent Street, there is now a sign that shows what the facility will look like. And I really appreciate you taking the time and bringing energy and attention to this and highlighting recycling and environmental issues as well.
Well, it really matters. What you do really matters, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself.
All right. You too. Have a wonderful night.
You too. Finally, coming up next will be Jill Ahlberg-Yo. I'll finally get it in. Oh, it's so sad, isn't it? All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back in just a moment. It is now 8:24 here at WCCO. Welcome back. I have to let Jonathan know something that I did not long ago. I took some clothing to...
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, seriously, this is a good thing. I took some clothing to a place where you can recycle it. You know, you can put it there, and they'll go through the bins, and they keep, you know, lots of people working in there. It's like a... to see that many people, and it's so organized, I was really surprised at that.
Was it Goodwill?
It was Goodwill. Big Goodwill.
Yep.
And I have to tell you, I've never seen that before. And people are giving. They are giving of old clothes, shoes, you know, you name it. For children, oh my gosh, the hats that they had, I mean, warm hats. And to stand there and watch it happen, the security guard that was in the space, and it's just a big open space with all of these bins. And I said to him, this is awesome. This is how it's done. He goes, yeah, this is that. It's right here at this particular Goodwill.
Yeah.
And that, I was impressed with that.
I mean, they have the facilities now where you can drive around. You can drive up and drop them off, and you don't have to go inside of the store and that sort of thing. And so they have those big back rooms where they'll sort through things.
Yeah.
I know that there are two Goodwill facilities right near where I live. One is a smaller place, but then they got a bigger one. This is off of the frontage road as you're going up. It's Cleveland. Technically Cleveland Avenue, but if you're going up on 35, it's right before you hit County Road C on 35W, and that is a pretty massive Goodwill facility. They got, I think, if memory serves right, they got like bays, like truck bays.
Yeah.
That the bigger trucks can drive up to, can back into, and they just, you know, roll up the doors and pull in the stuff.
Yeah, well, the one I went to was straight out 81, you know.
Okay, yes.
Just straight out 81, and it was really impressive, and I had a chance to talk to him and another person who came over and just started telling me about what they do and how they do it and how many people are engaged. It was impressive, no matter what was in the bin, and they move it so quickly and put it into another bin. And people come in and go, yep, I want that, and that, and I'm going to give you this, this, and this, and I brought in a bunch of stuff, you know, to donate, so... It's a beautiful thing.
I need to do that. I keep telling myself, and I've got shirts, especially more like shirts and dress shirts and stuff like that, that I don't use anymore. I've got jeans and some pants that I don't use anymore that I need to wash, wash them, make sure that they're laundered, and then take them over. That's right. What I need to do, and I keep forgetting to do it. And so I need to get on that before the end of the year.
I went to a thrift store recently, too, and they had underwear for sale.
Yeah.
Used underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I mean, I'm not going to kid you. I stood there for a minute. I stood there and looked at it, and I said, okay. I mean, those are panties on that, hanger.
I say this. I don't want to give that away. Just because I think, you know, you've worn it for so many years and so many times, it just seems
my God.
It just seems nasty to me. But as long as they're laundered, as long as you wash them and continually wash them, they should be okay. They should be fine.
Well, some things are stained, and those stains don't come out. No, seriously.
That's why I said wash them continuously.
You know, how much bleed do you need? I mean, really. So there are some things that I see at the thrift stores, and I go to thrift stores, and sometimes I see them, and I go, wow, that's amazing. That scarf, you know, someone made, you can tell a grandmother or someone made that scarf, and it felt really special. But when it comes to bras and panties and underwear for men and that sort of thing, I'm thinking to myself,
but it depends on how white do you want it? Do you want it eggshell white?
Why do you bring up white for the color of draws?
Do you want it blinding white? Because usually they're not called tidy readies. They're called tidy whities for a reason.
I have a question for you that I can't ask.
They're not called tidy greenies. You know, they're called tidy whities. So usually they are white.
I don't usually see mostly white bras. I see a lot of white bras. But, you know, I don't see.
I'm not going to touch the bra area because that is not an area of my expertise. So
that's unfortunate. I can't believe I said that.
I have
I'm
to
sorry,
give you
Jonathan.
Props. I have no. I give you props. I swung the door wide open, I cracked the door a little bit. You kicked that door. I applaud you. That was props for a good diss. That's props.
I'm sorry, Jonathan. My goodness. Well, I do want to encourage everyone that if you have anything to take to thrift stores or, you know, to the Goodwill or any of those, please do. So many people need them. Please do. And then you can bring them home or wherever you are. If you're in an apartment building with washers and dryers, yes, just wash them again so that you feel comfortable with it. But for me, it's hard with underwear. That's a really difficult thing. But I say, hey, to everyone that does that, God bless you for getting those items out to the people who need them. That's for sure. Okay, so is it time for me to take a break at this moment? Okay, Jonathan. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steel Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so excited about this hour, as you've been hearing, if you've been listening. I've been trying to get here. Let me give you a little bit of information. As Native American Heritage Month continues, an exhibit over at the Minneapolis Institute of Art is celebrating the work of indigenous photographers. You can see in our hands through January 14th at the museum. So again, it is called In Our Hands through January 14th at the museum. Now, to go deeper into the exhibit, we welcome co-curator Jill Alberg-Yo on the show, and she joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Welcome, Jill. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
I have been waiting to get to this conversation tonight. So many of us have seen amazing pictures of Native Americans, and not necessarily during Native American Heritage Month, but we see more and more photographs, and they are absolutely beautiful. I remember a time, maybe 15 to 20 years ago, I've been here in Minnesota for about 46 years. And so let's just say half of that time, I used to always look around for more Native American wares and Native American pictures, but most of them were in black and white at that time. Knowing that you see them in color today is a really big deal, and it's spectacular, by the way. Tell us about how In Our Hands came to be.
Yes, well, it was a really incredible opportunity. We have a Mide Wakantuan, Shakopee Mide Wakantuan Sioux Fellow at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, supported by SMSC. And she is great at Jada Gray Eagle. She is a noted photojournalist. She was really interested in being a fellow at MIA. So she came to the museum and she asked, where are our holdings of Native photographers? Because we have this really great deep holdings of photography in our collection. And we had maybe five, just a handful. So we knew that we needed to do something about it. So Casey Riley, who's the curator of photography, Jada and me, we said, what's a better way to learn about the field than to create an exhibition with a whole host of people?
That is remarkable. I can imagine how excited you all are. And I'm curious to know what you're hearing from people that are, because it's open right now, correct? I want to get that
right.
It is. Yeah. So what are you hearing from those that are getting a chance to really see and try to understand exactly what these amazing photographs are? Is there someone there that is able to explain more?
Yes. We have wonderful hosts. We have guides. We have an audio guide that you can take with hearing directly from the artists themselves. We have videos where we went in Canada into the Southwest, where we interviewed many of the artists featured in the contemporary artists featured in the show. It's just, it's a really thoughtful, moving experience. And what we have been hearing is people wanting to come back, mm-hmm. saying, you know, it's so deep, they want to see it again.
Is this something that will be placed in a book that we can purchase?
Well, actually, it is placed in our hands, Native Photography 1890 to now. We have an accompanying catalog with each of the works that are in the exhibition, and that is available at the MIA store.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love their store, by the way. So what are you hearing from people? I'm sure that you're getting a big response.
Yes, it's been really wonderful to hear. I think the primary importance for us as we created this for the Native community members mm-hmm. is what their responses are. And we've gotten wonderful feedback. People saying, thank you, we are represented here. We have these beautiful things for everybody to enjoy. And for the general audiences, we just hear that people really feel moved and kind of ask, why didn't we know about all of these great photographers that have been doing good, great work for, you know, a century?
Are they travel photographers? They go all over the country?
Yeah. So in the show, we have photographers from 1890 to the present day, representing Native people from up in the Arctic down to the Southwest, on to the East Coast, the West Coast, throughout time and place. So there's so many different Native nations represented. There's so many different kinds of artistic kinds of photography. There's snapshot, there's photojournalism, there's very conceptual works of art. So it just ranges.
The photographers, do they go out on the streets in the areas where there are Native Americans, especially since it's Heritage Month? So those photographers, are they going all over the cities to find more and more people that maybe they have never been able to photograph?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really beautiful to see so many emerging photographers that are have always been, actually. And, you know, this is one of the things that we've learned so much is Native photographers have always existed, and they've been doing great work for over a century. But they haven't been necessarily given the representation in a place like a big art museum. So this is the opportunity to see all of that great work and see all of the emerging artists that are going into their communities, going all around the world, actually, to document a whole variety of things.
Right. And I want to know a little bit more about the variety of the photographs. Are you seeing that they're seeing the angst and pain as well as the beauty and love and joy in these photographs?
That's exactly right. I mean, I think you said it really well. There's beauty, there's pain, there's truth that many of our non-Native visitors have, you know, come into these exhibition spaces and said, how did I not know about this? How did I not know about, you know, boarding school experience? How did I not know about the deep tragedy of Wounded Knee, or, you know, so many, the conditions in which the ice is melting for the habitat of Inuit people? How did I not know that? And there's this beauty, there's truth, there's humor. Oh, that's the other thing. The show is filled with humor. So it's like you said, it's a range of emotions, a range of historical moments for everybody to come and think about and absorb.
Absorb, that's the key. Trying to absorb it has been very difficult for Americans overall, no matter what color we are. And trying to understand exactly what is being said in the photography and, you know, on the photographs. I remember going to Mia a while ago, and you go into the Native American areas in the museum, and you start to really look and try to figure out, what is that feeling? What is it that I'm seeing? What is it that I'm feeling? I don't understand that. How do we learn what it truly means? There's so many of us that just don't know enough.
Yes. I mean, I think that one of the things that we do is we try to provide our visitors the layers for them to understand it in a visceral way, right? Like, I'm responding to this as a human being. I'm looking at this image, and this is what is bringing up to me as a human. And then I want to learn more, so maybe I'm listening on the audio guide directly from the artist, saying what is being depicted, and why they chose to present this image. And then every one of the images have an extended label. So, and that's written from our broad council, as well as artists, that provide our visitors a glimpse into what the deeper meanings are.
Right. And those deeper meanings can, you know, actually morph into a different way of looking at it. It's just so beautiful what you do. And I'm curious to know, what does it mean when you say in our hands?
Great question. Well, I think it's it was meant to mean many different things. And I guess fundamentally, what happens when a camera is in the hands of Native photographers? You know, for so many years, especially at the late 19th, early 20th century, there were non-Native people depicting Native people that kind of presented Native people stuck in time, people like Edward Curtis, that had a lot of consequences, far-reaching consequences for the American imagination of what Native people are. So what happens if you turn that around and you have a show that is created not only in the hands of the photographers, but one thing that we did at MIA is the show was itself created in the hands of our curatorial council of 14 amazing Native legends in the field who have dedicated their lives to this and helped us create this show from the ground up.
It's remarkable. I see, you know, Native Americans. I was in Aiken County recently, and it's just so beautiful to see you, to see who you are, to see how you are and how you move and be who you are as a Native American. And finally, it feels as though when we hear more and more stories that people are actually paying attention and they want to learn more. Many Minnesotans want to learn more. I know I do. I have Choctaw in my blood, you know, and I tell as many people as I can, yeah, I got some Choctaw in me. I'm so excited about that. And so it's a beautiful thing when people really get the understanding. They have the insight to be able to understand exactly what it means when you say in our hands. And it just moves me. I just want you to know, when I saw that and read that, I just thought, oh my gosh, that's it, in our hands. And hopefully we will see others that will understand it, because we have a challenge here in the state of Minnesota with many people who say, I'm not quite sure what that means. Do I need to know what that means? Yes, we need to know. Just like people need to know about who I am, just like they need to know about who you are. That's important.
I agree. And I think that art is a wonderful opportunity to have those kinds of conversations. It's a way into understanding things at a deeper level, at a human level, at a truthful level, that a lot of times people's hearts and minds are more open when they're looking at a beautiful beautiful depiction of something. And so I think that that might be something that is a great strength about this exhibition.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What you do really matters. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Jill Ahlberg-Yo. What a pleasure. I'm so grateful to have you on tonight.
Thank you.
All right,
Thanks, take care of
yourself. And people can go over and still see it, right? Just want to make sure of that.
Yes, until January 14th.
All right, at MIA, so don't miss it. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Love this song. I have no idea what it's about. You ever do that, Jonathan? Find a song that sounds great, and you really don't know what it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, well, yes. There you go. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steel Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so excited about this hour, as you've been hearing, if you've been listening. I've been trying to get here. Let me give you a little bit of information. As Native American Heritage Month continues, an exhibit over at the Minneapolis Institute of Art is celebrating the work of indigenous photographers. You can see in our hands through January 14th at the museum. So again, it is called In Our Hands through January 14th at the museum. Now, to go deeper into the exhibit, we welcome co-curator Jill Ahlberg-Yo on the show, and she joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Welcome, Jill. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
I have been waiting to get to this conversation tonight. So many of us have seen amazing pictures of Native Americans, and not necessarily during Native American Heritage Month, but we see more and more photographs, and they are absolutely beautiful. I remember a time, maybe 15 to 20 years ago, I've been here in Minnesota for about 46 years. And so let's just say half of that time, I used to always look around for more Native American wares and Native American pictures, but most of them were in black and white at that time. Knowing that you see them in color today is a really big deal, and it's spectacular, by the way. Tell us about how In Our Hands came to be.
Yes, well, it was a really incredible opportunity. We had we have a Mide Wakantuan, Shakopee Mide Wakantuan Sioux Fellow at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, supported by SMSC. And she is great at Jada Gray Eagle. She is a noted photojournalist. She was really interested in being a fellow at MIA. So she came to the museum and she asked, where are our holdings of Native photographers? Because we have this really great deep holdings of photography in our collection. And we had maybe five, just a handful. So we knew that we needed to do something about it. So Casey Riley, who's the curator of photography, Jada and me, we said, what's a better way to learn about the field than to create an exhibition with a whole host of people?
That is remarkable. I can imagine how excited you all are. And I'm curious to know what you're hearing from people that are, because it's open right now, correct? I want to get that
it
right.
It is.
Yeah. So what are you hearing from those that are getting a chance to really see and try to understand exactly what these amazing photographs are? Is there someone there that is able to explain more?
Yes, we have wonderful hosts. We have guides. We have an audio guide that you can take with hearing directly from the artists themselves. We have videos where we went in Canada and to the Southwest, where we interviewed many of the artists featured in the contemporary artists featured in the show. It's just, it's a really thoughtful, moving experience. And what we have been hearing is people wanting to come back, mm-hmm. saying, you know, it's so deep, they want to see it again.
Is this something that will be placed in a book that we can purchase?
Well, actually, it is placed in our hands, Native Photography 1890 to Now. We have an accompanying catalog with each of the works that are in the exhibition, and that is available at the MIA store.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love their store, by the way. So what are you hearing from people? I'm sure that you're getting a big response.
Yes, it's been really wonderful to hear. I think the primary importance for us as we created this for the Native community members mm-hmm. is what their responses are. And we've gotten wonderful feedback. People saying, thank you, we are represented here. We have these beautiful things for everybody to enjoy. And for the general audiences, we just hear that people really feel moved and kind of ask, why didn't we know about all of these great photographers that have been doing good, great work for, you know, a century?
Are they travel photographers? They go all over the country?
Yeah. So in the show, we have photographers from 1890 to the present day, representing Native people from up in the Arctic down to the Southwest, on to the East Coast, the West Coast, throughout time and place. So there's so many different Native nations represented. There's so many different kinds of artistic kinds of photography. There's snapshot, there's photojournalism, there's very conceptual works of art. So it just ranges.
the photographers, do they go out on the streets in the areas where there are Native Americans, especially since it's Heritage Month? So those photographers, are they going all over the cities to find more and more people that maybe they have never been able to photograph?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really beautiful to see so many emerging photographers that are have always been, actually. And, you know, this is one of the things that we've learned so much is Native photographers have always existed, and they've been doing great work for over a century. But they haven't been necessarily given the representation in a place like a big art museum. So this is the opportunity to see all of that great work and see all of the emerging artists that are going into their communities, going all around the world, actually, to document a whole variety of things.
Right. And I want to know a little bit more about the variety of the photographs. Are you seeing that they're seeing the angst and pain as well as the beauty and love and joy in these photographs?
That's exactly right. I mean, I think you said it really well. There's beauty, there's pain, there's truth that many of our non-Native visitors have, you know, come into these exhibition spaces and said, how did I not know about this? How did I not know about, you know, boarding school experience? How did I not know about the deep tragedy of Wounded Knee or, you know, the conditions in which the ice is melting for the habitat of Inuit people? How did I not know that? And there's this beauty, there's truth, there's humor. Oh, that's the other thing. The show is filled with humor. So it's like you said, it's a range of emotions, a range of historical moments for everybody to come and think about and absorb.
Absorb, that's the key. Trying to absorb it has been very difficult for Americans overall, no matter what color we are. And trying to understand exactly what is being said in the photography, you know, in the photographs. I remember going to Mia a while ago, and you go into the Native American areas in the museum, and you start to really look and try to figure out what is that feeling? What is it that I'm seeing? What is it that I'm feeling? I don't understand that. How do we learn what it truly means? There's so many of us that just don't know enough.
Yes. I mean, I think that one of the things that we do is we try to provide our visitors the layers for them to understand it in a visceral way, right? Like, I'm responding to this as a human being. I'm looking at this image, and this is what is bringing up to me as a human. And then I want to learn more, so maybe I'm listening on the audio guide directly from the artist saying what is being depicted and why they chose to present this image. And then every one of the images have an extended label. So, and that's written from our broad council as well as artists that provide our visitors a glimpse into what the deeper meanings are.
Right. And those deeper meanings can, you know, actually morph into a different way of looking at it. It's just so beautiful what you do. And I'm curious to know, what does it mean when you say in our hands?
Great question. Well, I think it's it was meant to mean many different things. And I guess fundamentally, what happens when a camera is in the hands of Native photographers, you know, for so many years, especially at the late 19th, early 20th century, there were non-Native people depicting Native people that kind of presented Native people stuck in time, people like Edward Curtis, that had a lot of consequences, far-reaching consequences for the American imagination of what Native people are. So what happens if you turn that around and you have a show that is created not only in the hands of the photographers, but one thing that we did at MIA is the show was itself created in the hands of our curatorial council of 14 amazing Native legends in the field who have dedicated their lives to this and helped us create this show from the ground up.
It's remarkable. I see, Native Americans. I was in Aiken County recently, and it's just so beautiful to see you, to see who you are, to see how you are and how you move and be who you are as a Native American. And finally, it feels as though when we hear more and more stories that people are actually paying attention and they want to learn more. Many Minnesotans want to learn more. I know I do. I have Choctaw in my blood, you know, and I tell as many people as I can, yeah, I got some Choctaw in me. I'm so excited about that. And so it's a beautiful thing when people really get the understanding. They have the insight to be able to understand exactly what it means when you say in our hands. And it just moves me. I just want you to know when I saw that and read that, I just thought, oh my gosh, that's it. In our hands. And hopefully we will see others that will understand it, because we have a challenge here in the state of Minnesota with many people who say, I'm not quite sure what that means. Do I need to know what that means? Yes, we need to know. Just like people need to know about who I am, just like they need to know about who you are. That's important.
I agree. And I think that art is a wonderful opportunity to have those kinds of conversations. It's a way into understanding things at a deeper level, at a human level, at a truthful level, that a lot of times people's hearts and minds are more open when they're looking at a beautiful beautiful depiction of something. And so I think that that might be something that is a great strength about this exhibition.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What you do really matters. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Jill Ahlberg-Yo, what a pleasure. I'm so grateful to have you on tonight.
Thank you.
All right,
Thanks, take care of yourself.
And people can go over and still see it, right? Just want to make sure of that.
Until January 14th.
All right, at MIA, so don't miss it. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Love this song. I have no idea what it's about. You ever do that, Jonathan? Find a song that sounds great, and you really don't know what it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, well, yes. There you go. There you go. Do you ever go to the museums?
I don't. I need to get out to them and see a lot of these exhibits that are, you know, they highlight the things that you would never usually see, whether you're around them or not. So what I mean by that is you could live in a city, but then you have an art exhibit that maybe looks at city life or cityscapes in a completely different way than you see it in your everyday life.
Right.
Or you get to see different cultures. You get to see different lifestyles, ways of life. It's a great canvas. Again, kind of pun intended, pun not. It's a great canvas to see what life offers for everybody else that you maybe don't interact with on a regular basis.
I am very grateful for museums. Museums give us history, right? Now, some people complain and say, wait a minute, you know, I've read books where that wasn't necessarily true, that sort of thing. You know, there are people who really look at these books and they study and they read and they try to look back and find the mistakes, you know, that sort of thing. And what's remarkable is that we're still learning. We're still learning. We're learning about each other. We're learning about tribes. We're learning about us, ourselves, and who we are and where we're from. All of that is happening at the same time, and it is not easy to deal with it. Sometimes, I know with me having Native American in me, I'm very happy and proud of that. Very happy.
I'll say it this way. I'll try to summarize it this way. Museums give you the ability to learn on your own time. So you're not in a classroom setting. You're not, you don't have 40 minutes a day to go over material and learn new material. You can go to a museum, see an exhibit, learn about whatever the exhibit is trying to teach on your own time, and then it's up to you to make the choice, hey, I want to learn more about that. I think that's a great thing about museums, a great quality.
Well, the one thing about some of the exhibits, a lot of the exhibits, you don't quite understand them, but they move you in some way. And that's why I love going to the museums. And it's not just about learning. It's also about healing. I remember I had a very hard time in my life, and I had to go to the museum. I went to MIA, and I just wanted to see a certain painting that I fell in love with. And you would walk up to it in this long corridor. You would walk up to the picture, the painting. And this was an old painting of fruit. And, you know, at first you're walking up to it and it looks like fresh grapes and just fresh fruit. And, you know, you're walking towards it and you're smiling, right? I would smile until I realized when I got right up on it, everything was rotten and seething with bugs. And I started weeping because I knew at that moment I had a healing moment. Just to be able to walk towards that beautiful fruit and realize that it's awful told me a whole new story about myself and what I had been going through, and I could see it from the eyes of art. So I want people, especially those tonight,
and
to
that's
listen.
What I'm saying. You learn it in your own way, and on your own pace. Art speaks to us in different ways. It spoke to you differently than the next person that saw it, than the next person that saw it. That's the beauty of a museum and the art that's in it.
And the art that's in it. There you go. My goodness. We have really walked all over when it comes to the type of topics that we've had tonight. And thank you so much for sticking with us. My two producers are Jonathan Lowe as well as Chris Tubbs. Thank you, Chris, for what you've done as well. Coming up, we're going to actually start with Center Stage will be our next time that you will hear us at 9:08 or so. So stick and stay with us. It's what I love to do is right here. Be here with you. So thank you. Love this song. I have no idea what it's about. You ever do that, Jonathan? Find a song that sounds great and you really don't know what it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, yes. There you go. There you go. Do you ever go to the museums?
I don't. I need to get out to them and see a lot of these exhibits that are, you know, they highlight the things that you would never usually see, whether you're around them or not. So what I mean by that is you could live in a city, but then you have an art exhibit that maybe looks at city life or cityscapes in a completely different way than you see it in your everyday life.
Right.
Or you get to see different cultures. You get to see different lifestyles, ways of life. It's a great canvas. Again, kind of pun intended, pun not. It's a great canvas to see what life offers for everybody else that you maybe don't interact with on a regular basis.
I am very grateful for museums. Museums give us history, right? Now, some people complain and say, wait a minute, you know, I've read books where that wasn't necessarily true, that sort of thing. You know, there are people who really look at these books and they study and they read and they try to look back and find the mistakes, you know, that sort of thing. And what's remarkable is that we're still learning. We're still learning. We're learning about each other. We're learning about tribes. We're learning about us, ourselves, and who we are and where we're from. All of that is happening at the same time, and it is not easy to deal with it. Sometimes, I know with me having Native American in me, I'm very happy and proud of that. Very happy.
I'll say it this way. I'll try to summarize it this way. Museums give you the ability to learn on your own time. So you're not in a classroom setting. You're not, you don't have 40 minutes a day to go over material and learn new material. You can go to a museum, see an exhibit, learn about whatever the exhibit is trying to teach on your own time. And then it's up to you to make the choice, hey, I want to learn more about that. I think that's a great thing about museums, a great quality.
Well, the one thing about some of the exhibits, a lot of the exhibits, you don't quite understand them, but they move you in some way. And that's why I love going to the museums. And it's not just about learning. It's also about healing. I remember I had a very hard time in my life, and I had to go to the museum. I went to MIA, and I just wanted to see a certain painting that I fell in love with. And you would walk up to it in this long corridor. You would walk up to the picture, the painting. And this was an old painting of fruit. And, you know, at first you're walking up to it and it looks like fresh grapes and just fresh fruit. And, you know, you're walking towards it and you're smiling, right? I would smile until I realized when I got right up on it, everything was rotten and seething with bugs. And I started weeping because I knew at that moment I had a healing moment. Just to be able to walk towards that beautiful fruit and realize that it's awful told me a whole new story about myself and what I had been going through, and I could see it from the eyes of art. So I want people, especially those tonight,
and
to
that's
listen.
What I'm saying. You learn it in your own way, in on your own pace. Art speaks to us in different ways. It spoke to you differently than the next person that saw it, than the next person that saw it. That's the beauty of a museum and the art that's in it.
And the art that's in it. There you go. My goodness. We have really walked all over when it comes to the type of topics that we've had tonight. And thank you so much for sticking with us. My two producers are Jonathan Lowe as well as Chris Tubbs. Thank you, Chris, for what you've done as well. Coming up, we're going to actually start with Center Stage will be our next time that you will hear us at 9:08 or so. So stick and stay with us. It's what I love to do is right here. Be here with you. So thank you.